We're about to begin.
My name is Larry Rasmussen. I teach in Washington, D.C. in a Methodist seminary and have been at Holden on staff this summer. We're going to spend 2 days on the creation accounts, Genesis 1 and 2. I think there are some surprises there. I want, first of all, however, to find someone who has the courage to read some verses from the first letter to Timothy. Now, since none of us spend a lot of time reading Timothy, let me tell you where it is. It comes just before Titus. Yeah. So when someone has found 1 Timothy, the second chapter, the 8th verse and on through the 15th, would that person read? Yes, go ahead. Appropriate, incidentally, that it be a man. All right.
Timothy, I desire then that in every place the men should pray, lifting holy hands without anger or quarreling. Also that women should adorn themselves modestly and sensibly in seemly apparel, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly attire, but by good deeds as befits women who profess religion. Do I dare continue? let a woman learn in silence with all submissiveness. I permit no woman to teach or to have authority over men. She is to keep silent. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived and became a transgressor. Yet woman will be saved through bearing children if she continues in faith and love and holiness with modesty.
You see why it was necessary to have a man read that. Since women are to keep silent and they are not to teach us men. Well, the instruction is there, and the reasons are there. After all, Adam was formed first, and then Eve, and Eve was deceived. Women might yet be saved through bearing children, providing they continue in faith and love and holiness, and of course with modesty. Anyway, you're on your way. All right. Well, I would like to know what you think of both the instruction, but even more so, what you think of the reasons for the instruction that is given by the writer to Timothy. Adam was formed first and then Eve. That is, the creation accounts are appealed to here as the grounds for proper conduct, proper behavior. Marge?
It's intriguing to me that whenever I hear Genesis 1 expounded, the speaker talks about how God created the lower forms of life first.
Oh.
I am gathering more sympathy for the writer here who wants women to keep silent about not be teaching us. So, actually, in the seminary where I teach, one of the students contended that after all made exactly your point, the professor made your point, when one of the students said, well, men should be decision makers and women should be the support system because Adam was created before Eve. And Jim said, well, the plants were created before Adam. Do you regard those as having authority over you? No. The pastor I had when I grew up, the pastor I had for catechism, came along with this sort of logic that because Adam was created before Eve, that therefore women are to be over men. It was interesting to me because the second creation account has humanity, Adam created first, and then the other forms of life. So if you go by the logic of the order, you run into problems immediately, because in the first creation account, you have one order of creation, in the second creation account, you have the reverse order. But I think it's probably capable of human beings, and maybe male human beings, to say that because humanity is created last, that makes humanity the crown of creation. That's what my pastor told me. And then I think my pastor, if it had been pointed out to him that humanity was created first in the second creation, would have said, see, that proves it. Humanity is the crown of creation. So we can do quite a lot with this. Anyone want to contend, other than Marge's contention here about lower forms and higher forms, and that makes Eve higher than Adam, anyone want to contend anything else about the reasoning of the author? I mean, was the author to Timothy a lousy scholar? Had, I was going to say she, but I don't think it's she. Had he, did he just do a lousy job of the exegeting the creation accounts?
What's to say Adam was not tempted too? Did he not see the serpent?
Oh, they're both deceived. But let's even go farther back than that. Well, let me ask a different question, then we'll get to the board. What kind of pattern do you see here in the relationship between male and female? And then we'll go to whether it's in the creation accounts or not.
It's just reflecting that day's view of male and female.
The time of this writing, yeah. My question will be whether it reflects the time of the creation accounts coming into being. It certainly reflects this. It's a patriarchal pattern. The dominant pattern is dominance and submission. Things are arranged in the world on an up and down scale, and those that are higher have authority and are valued more highly than those that are lower. Marge?
I just wondered if you wanted to question that text as to its the context of it. You know, it's being placed, say, in Ephesus, where the Temple of Diana of the Ephesians was, and where women were given a year off from domestic duties and from marital relations in order to serve their term as a priestess in the temple, which included prostitution and the initiation of male converts into the religion of Diana.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, considering that context, Paul, if indeed Paul is the writer.
No, not likely.
Yeah, not likely. Yeah. But whoever wrote then would be saying, in that context, women had not only ritual, but even life and death authority over men, because they could say whether or not a man would be permitted into becoming a novitiate in the Temple of Diana. And if the male even displeased them, as I understand it, they could say that he could be put to death. Mm.
That's helpful, and all texts ought to be read in context. What is to be said in addition, however, is that this reflects the wider society quite apart from temple prostitution and the place of women there. That this would be reflected in communities of faithfulness that had nothing to do with the temple as well. So that there is a general pattern of domination and submission. I put on the board here a sketch of a way of looking at things that has had a long history in the West, goes way, way back to pre-biblical times, and it continues, I had it from my parents, I had it from in my school education, so did you. I learned it in catechism, and so it continues even into the present in some forms. I've drawn here, in case you cannot see, on the left, a kind of cosmic ladder, an ordering of creation. In that schema, the picture that we carry around in our heads, often soaked up from our culture so we don't necessarily think it or think it out, is that God is the highest of, if one wants to say, beings of all. And God is represented as pure spirit. And then you go on down the ordering of creation, and the next things down the cosmic ladder are things we associate as ethereal spirits. So in Psalm 8, for the angels are just below God. Or when we think of the souls of the departed, they somehow go up to heaven, which is closer to pure spirit, which is God. And then below the ethereal spirits comes humanity. And in this picturing of creation, below humanity are the other animals. So we talk about higher species and lower species, not just with respect to Adam and Eve, as Marge said, but the animals out there. My son loved the Richard Scarry books, and one of my favorite figures in there is Lowly Worm. But I always thought that's Richard Scarry's name. It wasn't Lowly Worm's name, probably. I mean, Werner's worms up here probably don't regard themselves. It's not their point of view that they're a lower species from us. That's our point of view. Humanity is a higher species. Oh, maybe below us then are apes and so on down the line. And then plants are yet lower species from animals. And finally, you get to the bottom where inorganic matter or the soil, the earth. That's our kind of ordering of things. Now, that which is earthly then is more base. And that which is of the spirit is higher, to be valued, more highly desired. I've sorted out there, or set out, humanity because we have a hierarchical ordering, hierarchy meaning here simply ordering things in terms of up and down and value accorded that which is higher. We have a hierarchical pattern when we talk about humanity too, or we have had anyway, lots of protests against it these days. We've lived with a set of dualisms in which we've said that spirit is somehow closer to God than body. Body is more of the earth. Body is associated with that which is more base. We have said that reason is higher and more trustworthy than emotion. You shouldn't trust your emotions. And emotions are more associated with that which you know intuitively, whereas reason is gives you the source, or is the way of proceeding to know things by logic, and that's more trustworthy than intuition. We have said mind is above body, or we have said male is above female. Now, go take the correlations across the top of those dualisms. What has been associated with men has been reason, logic, mind. You all know that women are more intuitive and more emotional, and men are more logical and reasonable. Yeah. So women are, they sense their bodies more than we men do. That puts them lower on the hierarchical pattern than men. And in fact, in a lot of theology in the West, the contention with Thomas Aquinas and others is that men more correctly reflect the image of God than do women, because the image of God has been associated with the gift of reason. We have also categorized peoples on a hierarchical pattern. Caucasians have been superior to blacks. The same correlations persist. Blacks somehow are more sensual. I have a brother-in-law who tells me that he knows, I don't know how he knows, but he knows that black men are probably better lovers than white men. There's something they feel their body. They know things with their emotions or in their intuitions, whereas white people are more scientific and you know, technocratic and logical and so on. And you know, in the law, we put black people, they didn't have the same rights as white people. In medieval law, Jews were in the same category as some animals with respect to protection by the law. So peoples are ordered in terms of superior and inferior. Those words themselves, superiority and inferiority, reflect a hierarchical pattern of seeing the universe. And that has come out in terms of male and female. The pattern all through is dominance and submission. Whether it's master-slave, whether it's male-female, or whether it's humanity and the rest of nature. The rest of nature is below us. We are to have dominion over it. That puts us higher than it. The same pattern is there. In fact, the feminist theologians are very insightful on how the psychological relationships between male and female in the West represent the same pattern as the relationship between humanity and nature. Humanity has treated nature like men have treated women. Domination, submission, master, slave.
You use the term West frequently, and I think there's a key there. You get outside the Western civilizations and you don't have so much of this feeling many times of male domination over females.
Well, I spent a little time in Africa, and it's very clear there that it's male over female.
In Africa?
Yeah. In the parts of Africa I was in 3 years ago in Kenya in the parliament, they were debating whether or not men could be arrested for beating their wives and parents could be arrested for beating their children. Now they decided that that there shouldn't be punishment for that unless there was severe injury. Because after all, women and children needed the discipline, and it was up to the men who were responsible as head of family to provide that. No one raised the question whether women should be arrested if they beat their men, or parents if they beat their children, to discipline them. But
does this get down to a physical thing in many cases?
Yeah, in this particular instance, that was the question. So that's interesting, and we could talk about it. That's interesting because you don't have the same humanity-nature relationship, but you do have a patriarchal one on male-female. So what I want to say then is that there has been a pattern that's been around for a long time, which is a combination of a hierarchical pattern, ordering creation, seeing the world in terms of up and down, and within that, a patriarchal pattern, where male is dominant over female. Now, to the creation accounts themselves, and then we'll see if the writer to Timothy had any basis whatsoever for the stuff that he passed on to us. When the people of Israel became a people in Exodus and in the wilderness, they began with the notion of God as liberator. They did not. The Bible does not begin with Genesis. The Bible begins with Exodus. When they came out of the wilderness and into Canaan, they met peoples of other cultures who had their explanations of how things got started, why the world was in the shape it is, and what kind of future or destiny. These pictures of what the world looks like and what went wrong and where things might be headed were taught in the form of stories, myths, legends, passed on from generation to generation. When the Israelites came into Canaan, they were then challenged by the occupants of the land there to tell their own story about origins, about conflict and catastrophe, or what went wrong with the human story, why evil, and to say what they thought was ahead. The creation stories come out of that time of meeting other cultures, and where the Israelites have say, the God who liberated us from Egypt is also the God of the cosmos. Now, we should not read Genesis 1 and 2 by themselves. They are part of a block. The block is Genesis 1 through 11. That is a set of accounts which deals with origins, with catastrophe or what went wrong, and with God's new creation after the flood and a promise for the future. So this block is called, incidentally, the primeval history, creation through the flood, the Tower of Babel, and then up until chapter 12. Chapter 12 begins another kind of history called the ancestral history. The general picture is first of God creating a harmonious order out of chaos. Then, after that, in this block from 1 to 11, you have a breaking of that harmonious order and the return to chaos linked with human conduct, and then catastrophe that follows upon that breaking of the harmonious order, namely the flood. And then a new creation and a covenant, and the covenant is with Noah, and we'll want to look at that in some detail. Now I want to do two things over the next 2 days. Focus primarily upon the relationship between humanity and the rest of nature. I think there are some surprises there for us. But to begin today, and probably for a good portion of the time left, to talk about the relationship of male and female in these early accounts, and I think there are some surprises there as well. I remind you that we have generally viewed these accounts through the pattern of hierarchy and patriarchy. That probably affects translation. Every translator knows that a translation is an interpretation, so I want to point out some places where I think that pattern of the our looking at these texts affected the way in which they were communicated itself. So I will be asking about our interpretive grid as we read these texts, as I asked about the writer to Timothy's interpretive grid, and I will also be asking whether we can get at the way of seeing things that is reflected in these texts, the way of seeing things on the part of those who first set them down. They were a matter of oral tradition for a long time and then became a matter of a written tradition. Let's look then at the relationship of male and female, or the creation of male and female. Would someone read the first chapter of Genesis, verses 26 and 27?
Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them.
Thank you. Back to verse 26. In Hebrew, it says, and God said, let us make Adam in our image, after our likeness. I put the words here on the board, the Hebrew words Adam, and the second word up there is Adama. That is the word for earth. So, let us make Adam in our image, after our likeness. And then what does it say? And let
them.
Who's them? Who's them? Adam. is them. Who's Adam?
Maybe a nation.
How about mankind?
Adam is the Hebrew generic word for humanity. So, let us make humanity in our image. How is, who is humanity? Us is, if you ask Jewish scholars, that's a way of talking about God. It's a way of talking about the household of God. There's a, the creation picture has a picture of the household of God discussing the creating out of nothing. So in 27, so God created Adam in, now the English says, his own image. You should know that in the creation accounts, there are two words for God. One is Yahweh, and the other one is Elohim. Yahweh is a male term for God. Elohim is a female term for God. In this particular creation account, let's see, I think the first one is Elohim. And the second creation account is Yahweh. You shouldn't attach too much to that, because in Hebrew, that it's male or female as a word does not necessarily connote sexuality. But you ought at least to know that there are in Hebrew lots of feminine images for God as there are masculine images for God. And it does not make good sense to simply translate all references to God in exclusively masculine terms. So when it says here, so God created Adam in his own image, it would be better to say, so God created Adam in God's own image. The, it is not a male, exclusive male reference to God. In the image of God, God created. Now, why did this person put him there? We just got done saying Adam was them. In fact, if you will look at the next clause, which is a common Hebrew way of repeating the meaning, it says, male and female, God created them. Male and female, God created them, means this is descriptive of Adam. Humanity is constituted by male and female together.
You use mankind there instead of him.
Yeah, or humanity, whatever. But what's interesting is that the translator put him. Why? Not in the text.
Is the Hebrew plural?
No, the Hebrew, it's a reference to Adam. The, I'm just asking why did you choose him for Adam? When you are saying in the next clause that male and female. If you want to see a restatement of this, turn it over to Genesis 5. And we'll see how things got mixed up very early. 5, 1 and 2 reads as follows. This is the book of the generations of Adam. When God created Adam, I'm going to read it now without the exclusivist language, which isn't in the text. When God created Adam, God made Adam in the likeness of God. Male and female, God created them, and God blessed them and named them Adam when they were created. Straightforward. Now, if you look to the next verse, you see where we got a different twist. When Adam had lived 130 years, he became the father of a son. There, Adam is male. A male. Adam is not a male in Genesis 1, and Adam is not a male in Genesis 2. Adam in Genesis 1 and 2 is male and female, which together constitute humanity, which God called Adam. Our translations don't help because it refers to God, Adam as him. Okay, let's, in this creation account, male and female are, sexuality is present from the very beginning. Adam is created male and female from the start. Now look at the second creation account. I think maybe we should start with verse, second chapter, verse 7. Incidentally, the people who gave us these chapter and verse demarcations didn't have things straight. The first creation account goes down through chapter 2, verse 4. The second creation account starts at the second part of chapter 4, where it says, "In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, when no plant of the field was yet in the earth, and no herb of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was no man to till the ground, but a mist went up from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. Then the Lord God," that's Yahweh there, that's the male, Lord God, "formed Adam," is in the Hebrew, of Adamah, of dust from the ground. Adam comes from Adamah. Humanity is of the same stuff as the rest of the earth. Adam is a derivative term in Hebrew from Adamah, meaning we are all of the same stuff. The trees, the buildings, the other animals, the plants, you and I. "And breathed into Adam's nostrils the breath of life, and Adam became a living being." There, now, next what happens is that God puts Adam in the garden. Then the Adam is in the garden and is to dress it, care for it, till it, keep it. Jewish scholars interpret that in 2:15 as interpretive of the command to have dominion. Jewish scholars say, what does it mean that humanity has dominion over the earth? It means that humanity is to care for the earth. Dress it, keep it, till it. Be the faithful and careful steward. All right, you just have earth. Phyllis Tribble translates Adam here, because there's no identification yet of Adam. Translates Adam simply as earth creature from Adamah, a creature from the earth, whom God has put in the garden. So what happens? It's not good. I'm looking at 2:18. That Adam should be alone. I will make a helpmate, a partner, a companion for Adam. We don't know anything about Adam yet, except that Adam is to be the steward of the garden, and Adam is alone. Where does God go? Well, let me just ask this question. In your catechism class, who was created to be a helpmate, a companion, a partner for Adam? Did I hear someone say Eve? Where did you get that? I want you to look at the text. 19, verse 19. I just got done saying I'm going to make a helper for Adam. Who gets created then? The beasts of the field? That's a surprise. I thought it was Eve. Why the beasts of the field? What kind of logic is that? After all, humanity is a higher species than the other animals. You surely wouldn't create animals to be on the same plateau as humanity, would you?
You made a mistake in the first
time. I see, it was a mistake. This is a rough draft. We had a friend that reminds me of Marge's comments at the opening. She had a sweatshirt that said, "Adam was a rough draft."
Ooh.
She didn't know that red humanity was a rough draft. All right, so God is going to find a companion for the earth creature, the one from Adamah. Now, it just makes sense in Hebrew to go to the same stuff. If Adam is from Adamah, then you create other creatures out of Adamah to be the companion, the helper. So out of Adamah, verse 19, the Lord formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air and brought them to, and my RSV says, to the man. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a male. It is not a male in Hebrew. It is to humanity to see what humanity would call them. And whatever humanity called that creature, that was its name. The humanity gave names to all cattle, birds of the air, beasts of the field. It didn't quite fit. But for humanity, there was not yet that helper fit for Adam.
Larry, in my text, all of a sudden, the man becomes Adam. Is it a different
word? Oh, no.
In verse 20, when it says, but for Adam, in my text, no suitable helper was.
No, the translator just decided to use the name there. So there is the sense here that this earth creature is somehow different from other things created of the same stuff. The helper, all of these are real candidates. The animals, the birds, the fish, they are so close to us, they are real candidates for being our companion. We have an affinity with all things. We are of the same stuff. It reminds me of Chief Seattle. But it doesn't quite take. And so Yahweh caused a deep sleep to fall upon humanity, Adam. And while Adam slept, took one of Adam's ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib which the Yahweh had taken from Adam, Yahweh made into a woman and brought her to the man. Now, then the man said, this at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Do you have the RSV that has a little note on the bottom of the page? After woman it says D, and after man it says E in italicized lowercase. At the bottom of the page it says, for D, Hebrew Isha, and for man, Hebrew Ish. No, let the women keep silent. Up until this point, Adam is earth creature. Nothing is said about sexuality. When it is, there is a differentiation now of male and female, the words change. The word is no longer Adam, the word is Ish. And woman is Isha. Adam, humanity, has become Ish and Isha. No way of confusing Adam with a man, the male, in this account. Secondly, Ish and Isha have something of the relationship of Adam and Adamah. That is to say, they are of the same stuff. That's another derivative in Hebrew. It's a way of saying these two are of the same order. So, in both creation accounts, humanity together, or male and female together, constitute humanity. In both creation accounts, they together comprise the image of God. I remind you that that's talked about in the first creation account. I remind you that in creating them in God's image is creating them in God's image. It isn't that the male is created in God's image and the female somehow comes along later. In both creation accounts, they together are given dominion. It isn't that men are given dominion and females have something else to do. Support systems, civilizing influence. Now that's what the latest book by George Gilter on Wealth and Poverty has for the role of women. Men are the aggressive decision makers, the entrepreneurs. This is the one that David Stockman and Ronald Reagan are handing out right and left. And George Gilder's Wealth and Poverty. And women are to be a civilizing influence to temper this innate tendency to be aggressive and domineering. But in this account, both together are given dominion, and both together are given the same blessing. Be fruitful and multiply. The same divine blessing falls upon male and female alike. Both are made of the same stuff as the animals, Adama. And I remind you that in the creation account, if there is an ordering here, it's an ordering that always moves from chaos to order. And so if you go through the sun and the moon, the waters are separated. Some are put up above, some are put down below. The sun gives light by day and the moon rules by night. That's the patterning. And it's by days. You know, the first day this happened, the second day this happened, the third day this happened. Just take note that humanity and other living animals are created on the same day, all from Adama. Humanity is not created on a different day because it's not a different order of creation. I might also note, and this anticipates tomorrow, that the pattern of differentiation and separation with certain mandates having dominion is not only true of humanity. The sun is to rule by day, that's its job. The moon is to rule by night, that's its job. There are mandates for the ordering and regulating of creation that go all the way through this pattern. And so humanity fits into that pattern. It does not have an exclusive charge to run the created order. It has one of the mandates.